I'd like to know his sources where Bill Clinton killed 500,000 children. If he's talking about Rwanda, I don't think so, sir. Those figures that he just mentioned to me are very, very suspect. Let him identify the sources of those figures he just gave you.
Well, Ken O'Keefe, I'm going to...
Madeleine Albright is the source of that information.
Madeleine Albright, who I know, had never said, as long as I've known her,
famously
that
stated,
Bill Clinton was responsible for the killing of 500,000 people. And I've known Madeleine Albright for more than 20 years personally.
He sat over the sanctions that were responsible for the killing of 500,000 children. Madeleine Albright said, on balance, we think the price was worth it with regard to 500,000 children being killed because of the U.S.-led sanctions in Iraq. This is beyond debate. You are ill-informed, to say the least.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll call Madeleine Albright this afternoon and I'll ask her what you just said.
Okay, I guess you're going to follow up on that, maybe?
She said it on 60 Minutes. The whole world knows who's paying attention.
Very well. Ken O'Keefe, let's go back to Syria here. I'm going to go back to what this advisor to the royals has said. The world will see a new strategy for Syria, quieter, more open, not too extreme. Do you buy that? I mean, I'm curious how you can explain how the Saudis are telling the U.S. they intend to wrap up their support in the form of moderate opposition, this, of course, coming after the failure of the Geneva talks, and provide the insurgents with shoulder-fire missiles.
Yes, I mean, the Saudi regime is an affront to all Muslims around the world. This regime is the most hideous regime on the planet. The United States is so hypocritical, it's repulsive how hypocritical it is, that it has close ties with Saudi Arabia, provides incredible amounts of military surplus, military products, high technology products. It provides political cover for Saudi Arabia. All the while it talks about human rights, women's rights, children's rights, and it's dealing with this most offensive regime. The Saudi regime will continue to do all its dirty dealings, but it certainly won't be as overt as it was under Bandar Bush.
Well, we got to talk about another development here, Stuart Stogel, pretty significant, and that's the, I guess, the sacking of the FSA commander, Salam Idris. He has come out and said he rejected his dismissal by opposition leaders, and he said the Free Syrian Army's entire chain of command needed a total restructuring. I mean, talk about divided opposition, and of course now you're talking about the forces on the ground of the so-called divided SNC.
Well, again, I haven't followed that development that closely. But again, to me, it's emblematic that you're seeing some substantive changes both in the Syrian opposition as well as in the Syrian government. At this particular point, I'm not really sure where we're going to go on this. I assume that Lavrov will again be traveling to the region in the very, very near future as soon as the Sochi Olympics are over. And I think we'll get a clearer indication as to where we're going to go probably in about a month from now. At this particular point, a lot of things are in flux, and it can go one of several different ways.
Well, Ken O'Keefe, I'd like to take a step back and really ask you this, because if I'm just based on an outsider looking in here, you're looking at this policy shift coming from sidelining Prince Bandar and then bringing in this Prince Nayef. In a way, Saudi Arabia is saying, oops, you know, we made a mistake with Bandar. But didn't that mistake cost thousands of lives in Syria? How do they answer to the Syrians?
Well, yeah, I mean, if there was any justice in this world, Bandar would be going to The Hague for incredible crimes against humanity. I mean, the funding, probably in the billions, I don't know what the figure is, huge amounts of money to pay the most bloodthirsty psychopaths on the planet to go in and cut off the heads of Christians, torture people, and otherwise terrorize the entire country. And ultimately, we have to look back at the false flag in Ghouta, which is so ridiculous that we were ever told that Bashar al-Assad would have been so stupid and suicidal as to commit to a chemical weapons attack on the back of inviting UN inspectors literally within 10 miles of where they were after a day or two of arriving. And this false flag event, which we don't know for sure who was responsible, but Bandar Bush is very likely as a suspect, and it backfired tremendously. It also exposed the United States for being willing to provide air cover for effectively Al-Qaeda in Syria, which really did tick off a lot of American sons and daughters who happened to be in the military and thought for the last 12, 13 years they were fighting a war on terror against Al-Qaeda. So it's exposed so many of the hypocrisies and the lies of the way the systems of power work that it's become so problematic that they've had to ditch Bandar, and they'll probably have to do some other things stylistically, but the essence of what has been happening will still continue, and we as people know that, those of us who are paying attention.
I gotta get a reaction from you, Stuart Stogel.
Well, let's just say one thing.
Go ahead.
Well, I will say one thing, and that is, coming to the UN on a regular basis, I have fairly frequent contact with Ban Ki-moon, and I will tell you that Ban Ki-moon has very little regard for Bashar al-Assad, whom he considers to be a liar, and he has said that personally. I have never seen a particular world leader in such disrepute and held in such ill regard as Bashar al-Assad, with the UN Secretary General, who's normally very diplomatic on how he talks about and how he addresses foreign leaders. To be honest with you, Ban Ki-moon considers Bashar al-Assad nothing but a blatant liar who has committed war crimes, and he said so personally.
Ken O'Keefe, Ban Ki-moon calling Bashar al-Assad liar, as if Ban Ki-moon hasn't lied?
Well, the UN is a bankrupt institution which was tasked with the job of providing a means for conflicts to be resolved nonviolently. Not only has the UN failed in this mission so miserably, whether it's Ban Ki-moon or all of his predecessors, it has actually sat over the most violent century in the history of our world. So I don't care what Ban Ki-moon says. Ban Ki-moon also said the same basic things about Gaddafi in Libya, and I'm sure he would have said the same things about Saddam Hussein after he became the Butcher of Baghdad. But let us remember, of course, that the Butcher of Baghdad was our best friend and ally who was receiving chemical weapons and other weapons and financial support, agricultural support. All the while, we knew he was gassing Kurds and gassing Iranians and so on and so forth. So the UN is a bankrupt institution, and unless it can be reformed radically, it really has no relevance in this world, and it certainly hasn't done anything to prevent war.
Stuart Stogel, I got to ask you your reaction on this. And this comes from the foreign minister, Sergey Lavrov, of Russia. The United States officials admit in private conversation that terrorism is the main threat to Syria, but in formal statements they underscore that terrorism in this country cannot be beaten as long as Assad is in power. Do you believe that's indeed what American officials are saying in private?
Well, I don't know. I'm not privy to Sergey Lavrov's private conversations. The bottom line to it is, it's very possible there could have been a shift. John Kerry has confused a lot of people as to what the American position is. It may very well have been that Lavrov, who I do know for many, many years, has made a convincing argument that the main priority in stabilizing Syria at this point is addressing the issue of terrorism rather than regime change. I know that Lavrov is dead set against regime change. It's very conceivable he may have used his powers of persuasion to convince the Americans to take another look at the situation.
And Ken O'Keefe, what do you think about this comment that was made by Sergey Lavrov? He actually said that in private conversations, our U.S. colleagues admit that it is terrorism and not Bashar al-Assad that is the main threat to Syria.
Well, if they have any kind of intelligence or integrity, they would have said it. But of course, they have to do that privately. Let us recall, first off, the U.S. policy for Syria goes back to Oded Inan's A Strategy for Israel in the 1980s, and destabilizing all of the surrounding countries around Israel, balkanizing them as part of that plan. So they've achieved that goal largely in Syria right now. Not completely, because Bashar al-Assad's government hasn't fallen. But the other agenda for Syria was to use it as a stepping stone towards a war with Iran. They failed on that one miserably. So what we see right now is a fallback to the original plan, and they want to destabilize this country for as long as possible. So that's going to continue. There's still a huge motivation to keep Syria destabilized, despite the fact that Kerry and others will say, we want stability. That's a lie. It's an absolute lie. That's what they have to say publicly.
Very well. We're going to end it there. Thank you very much. Former U.S. Marine.
What does the United States gain?
I'm sorry. We're just fresh out of time. Thank you very much, Stuart Stogel from Newsmax magazine, who spoke to us from New York. And thank you for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mika Vatapwe and the entire team in the Capitol, Tehran, it's goodbye.